This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, August the 8th, 2021. And today on the program, we have WWE NXT Doom to discuss. The era of Paul Levesque's NXT possibly will be greatly different from this moment forward. More ratings news to discuss, as AEW did over 1 million viewers for, I think, the fourth consecutive week. We've got a quarter hour breakdown how this episode lines up in the history of AEW Dynamite going back to 2019. Ratings, of course, for Raw and SmackDown in their, what is this, third or fourth week on the return to the road. More live attendance news. We've got the United Center sold out for AEW on August the 20th. AEW has a new TV deal with a major international market. Click here to find out which one. And there's a hint from a job listing that indicates that maybe AEW has additional sort of side programs in the works, maybe. And we have Google Web Search to discuss, if there's time. But first, joining us live from South Buffalo to my south by southeast, everyone's favorite ring announcer, fresh off his special appearance at Excite Wrestling in the Johnson City Mall, Chris Gullo joins us to discuss the week's events.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Yeah, it was a fun show this past Saturday at Excite Wrestling. Big time Bill Collier's new champion.
Oh, really?
In the Battle New York tournament. And it's good to be back. Like I said, driving up the road, I'm happy to be home.
How long was that tournament? The Battle of New York. It was a tournament that Excite Wrestling put on, featuring wrestlers from all throughout New York State. But this is a tournament that had been going on for a while. Is that correct?
Yeah, it started in, I believe, June. Yeah.
Okay. Were those in seminar events, or were those other types of official events?
Those were the seminar events.
Okay. Yeah, big time Bill Collier and Jay Freddie had a good match at ESW a couple weeks ago. So what time did you get home last night / this morning?
Around 2 in the morning. Because we left the barbecue restaurant like close to 10 o'clock.
You went to the barbecue restaurant too. You went to the after party.
Yes. They have a vegan Cuban made out of jackfruit. That's amazing. Okay. So
how important would you say it is that you go to the after party to reassure your next booking in any given promotion? Not this promotion in particular, of course, but we're not going to analyze that here, but just in general, tell me about the politics of going to the after party in independent wrestling.
I think it all depends on how secure your spot you think it is. I mean, usually go to after parties because I just like spend an extra time with the guys and this and that. And then we had a nice crew of guys, and that's why I came.
Even though you have a 3.5 hour drive ahead of you to go home.
Yeah. I was like, but if it's, I'll put it this way. When I do MMA gigs, I don't really know anybody, and they always have after parties and I never go because I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
You know, if they pick somebody else, because I didn't go to the after party.
The MMA after parties, that's your opportunity to build these connections and get your brand out there and get future bookings,
I guess.
I have been watching wrestling more so than usual this week, as our local wrestler Daniel Garcia has wrestled on AEW Dynamite. I think he wrestled on Dark. He was in the finals of the SCI tournament last night, and he has another match later today. We're recording on Sunday for the IWTV title, so there's that. So, what do you want to talk about first, Chris Gullo?
Let's get right into the NXT releases. Sean Rossap reported Friday evening that WWE released Bobby Fish, Bronson Reed, Jake Atlas, Ari Sterling, Kona Reeves, Leon Ruff, Stephon Smith, Tyler Rust, Zachariah Smith, Asher Hale, the Giant Zangier, Mercedes Martinez, and also Desmond Troy, which was posted a little bit shortly after this.
Right. Good catch. That's not even on our notes. Chris Cole just knew that off the top of his head, folks. Yeah, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, plus 13. 13. Stephon Smith is a referee, but everybody else was a wrestler, right? Released. These are all NXT people. No, nobody here main roster. Although Bronson Reed, I think had done a dark match or something, or had been brought to main roster TV.
But, he did main event, I think. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he did the main event show.
Okay. So I think that was the most surprising one to me, that they would release somebody who actually has size, as we'll discuss here. It seems that there's been a change in the vision in WWE's developmental, that they want bigger people. They want people who are tall. Don't you love it when people are tall, Chris Gallo? I love it when people are tall.
But it's kind of funny because a couple of these guys were also tall, very tall, but not only Bronson Reed, but like...
But old.
Smith? Yeah, but Zachariah Smith was a basketball player. Mm-hmm. And then I actually don't know how tall the Giant Zangier is, but I'm guessing he's tall by his name being the Giant Zangier.
Yeah. I would suggest if you are a wrestler with ambitions to wrestle in WWE, that you get lifts, even if you're already tall, maybe brand yourself as the Giant something or other or something like that. Brand yourself as tall. I would suggest that. That's... if you want to really, raise the prospects of your getting not just signed, but promoted to the main roster and have them actually do something with you beyond 1 week.
So, and we actually, Denise Salcedo put out a tweet. And by the way, Hershey did an awesome job ring announcing for Game Changer Wrestling in Los Angeles last night. Okay. But she put out a tweet with the list of all the releases from 2020 and 2021. And I don't know if you want me to read them all off. They're pretty, just they're very long, very longest I've ever seen.
I think it's over 100 or something like that. Let's just do the 2022 WWE releases. All the wrestlers that WWE has released in 2021.
Yep. So we have Bobby Fish, Mercedes Martinez, Leon Ruff, Tyler Rust, Bronson Reed, Jake Atlas, Ari Sterling, Kona Reeves, Zachariah Smith, Asher Hale, Giant Zangier, Stephon Smith, Desmond Troy, Ric Flair, Bray Wyatt, Chase Parker, Matt Martel, Killian Dane, Marina Schaefer, Arturo Rios, Kurt Stallion, Sunil Singh, Samir Singh, Lars Sullivan, Big Show, Steve Cutler, Andrade, Billy Kay, Peyton Royce, Samoa Joe, Kalisto, Chelsea Green, Mickey James, Tucker, Bo Dallas, Mojo Rawley, Wesley Blake, Jessamine Duke, Kavita DeVee, Vanessa Bourne, Skylar Story, Ezra Judge, Alexander Wolf, Velveteen Dream, Braun Strowman, Lana, Buddy Murphy, Aleister Black, Ruby Riott, August Gray, Ara Daivari, Tony Nese, Tyler Breeze, Fandango, Santana Garrett, and Tino Sabatelli.
Tino Sabatelli. We should mention that Samoa Joe did get re-signed or something. He's clearly working again regularly in NXT again. But other than that, I think he's the only one that's been brought back. Yeah. So what does this mean? Is WWE getting ready for a sale? Should we revisit that quickly? Maybe you can update us as the advocate for WWE selling. Chris Gallo. Since our original discussion about this a few months ago, has WWE been acquired by a major media company?
Not yet.
Is Vince McMahon still alive? Is Vince McMahon still alive?
He is.
As far as we know. Maybe a related factor. Yeah. So, and this is developmental talent. Surely it does cut costs. But not as much as it would if WWE was cutting main roster talent, I guess. I mean, as far as the salaries that are being cut here. Is WWE cutting costs to remain profitable so that the company doesn't go out of business? Is that what's happening here?
No, I'm sure they're not because they go out of business. I'm sure they're cutting costs just because.
Is WWE a profitable business?
100%.
Is it not as profitable as it used to be, though? Isn't that the case, that it's not as profitable as it used to be?
Nope, it's more profitable than ever.
It's more profitable than ever, but it's not as profitable as it was in the Attitude Era, right? When it was super, super popular, right? It's not that profitable, right?
It's that profitable.
It's more profitable than it was in the Attitude Era. Even if, yes, even if you adjust for inflation, I reran the numbers and brought it up to 2021 US dollars yesterday, in fact. And I mean, not that I expected it to be any different, but now we have the more up-to-date numbers. When I was just, I had last done the math, I guess, in 2019 or maybe early 2020. But yes, even if you adjust for inflation, WWE's net income in 2020 and the estimate for this year is higher than it was in 1999 and 2000, which were the two most profitable years. I think that's what it is. It's either 98-99 and or it's 99-2000. More profitable now than they were in those eras where you think of WWE being extremely popular, which it was much more so than today. So it's not an issue of making the company in the black to get them out of debt, as you see, as I'm sure WrestleNomics listeners for the most part are well aware. This company's doing well. It's just about making WWE more, even more profitable, which they have a fiduciary duty to do in the interest of their investors if they want to make investors happy and promote investment in their company, which is publicly traded. I don't think that's the whole story. I think there's a, I think we'll get into it more. I think WWE is doing quite a bit to prevent themselves from being even more profitable than they would be otherwise. Which is hard to prove, but that's my opinion. And I think it's the opinion of a lot of other people too. So yes, I think that's what's happening. Let's actually jump to the PW Insider note, and then we'll go back to the two slides that are before that. The PW Insider had a note from Friday night about the future of NXT.
There's been a lot of talks internally of major changes for the NXT brand, including a new logo, new lighting, a focus on younger talents, and a different format to the TV shows. This house cleaning tonight appears to be part of those changes. Are we going to have challenges like the keg race?
Yeah. You're talking about the game show, the game show era.
Yes,
NXT.
The NXT game show. Yep.
Yeah, I'm struck first by the idea that there would be a new logo for NXT. I'm not ready yet to let go of the Wolfenstein logo that we currently have, the Wolfenstein look. I hope at least that of all these licenses that Nikon is selling, I hope they sell an NXT branded game level skin to like whatever the latest version is of Wolf 3D. I need that before we let go of this amazing branding that NXT has had lately. Or maybe even, you know what, I got another great idea for Nikon. Sell the NXT brand logo license to like a motorcycle company, like Harley Davidson NXT bikes. What about that, huh? Motocross or something? wait. No, I got it. Leather jackets. Yes. Where is the NXT leather jacket at WShop.com? Anyway, so what do you, we'll jump into, I want to talk about NXT on USA and so forth, but why is this happening? What's your assessment? Why is NXT being sort of reconfigured here?
We'll talk about it a little bit, but I actually did listen to the Wrestling Observer Radio last night, and I agree with a lot of what Dave is reporting, except I think there's a third person involved that he's not really talking about much. He's saying that a lot of these are Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard agreeing with him, and you know, really just, you know, they lost against AEW, and you know, now we got to reevaluate what they could do, and he's changing it to, it seems like, to a more traditional WWE style of, you know, like, you know, we talked about, you know, a couple tall guys released, but like, let's just face it. In my perfect opinion, I think the guy's a great wrestler. I never saw Alex Zane as a guy that Vince McMahon would put on Raw or SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just never did. And I think those type of guys are the ones that are really getting, you know, they're getting cut loose and all that. And I think with Bronson Reed, he looked impressive. They brought him up, and Vince probably just didn't see it.
Yeah, I think there's been, I mean, it's been pretty clear if you've been paying attention to W programming and if you've been paying attention to both NXT and the main roster for a while, you'll see that a lot of talent gets called up from NXT and doesn't get used that well, maybe in part because of the fact that Vince doesn't see NXT as serving the main roster very well as a pipeline because you've got, in all likelihood, two people who are making decisions. You got one person in NXT slash developmental making decisions to serve somebody else on the main roster who seem to have diverging views of professional wrestling. And I think, you know, Vince, and we're seeing sort of what you're talking about, what Dave said on Observer Radio this morning, that W wants to go back to, and notice Johnny Ace is back in power, that they want to go back to.
That's who I think's really involved, really, with these.
I thought maybe he was matched, but Pritchard and Laurinaitis.
Vince is who we doubled down on, but yeah.
So we want to go back to people who are tall, maybe over 6 foot tall or over 6 foot two or something. People who are big, because Vince sees that the widest possible, not just his own opinion, just happens, that's just coincidence that it's his own personal taste, I'm sure, but that the widest possible market will most readily accept people who are big and mainly that big. And maybe for female talent, he wants people who look more like supermodels or fitness models or something like that too, I bet. Rather than just having wrestling talent, which I think, Paul Levesque somehow got himself into the opinion that wrestling talent and what people like on the indies matters. So,
I got a question for you, Brandon. How successful was Bam Neely's WWE career? or what about Jackson Andrews?
Who's Jack?
Exactly. These are guys that were in the Laurinaitis era. They were tall. Okay. They showed up on television and they lasted weeks and then they were gone. And even like a guy like Ezekiel Jackson, love his Lucha Underground run.
Mason
another
Ryan
guy that didn't. Mason Ryan. There you go. There's another one. Like this is what we have to look forward to. All these guys out there right now that are getting cut in NFL training camps that are professional bodybuilders, they're gonna get the opportunity. Other than these guys that are out there working hard every weekend, traveling the roads, getting better at their craft.
So let's talk about like what's causing this. And I think every wrestling fan wants to talk about AEW versus WWE and the fact that AEW beat NXT consistently in the ratings in the Wednesday Night War. Almost every time in terms of key demo viewership and most of the time in terms of total viewership in the 70 some odd weeks that those programs ran head to head from late 2019 to April 2021. I think that's probably part of the story and part of the perception in Vince's mind that you didn't. And by the way, they're all only focused on themselves. But I don't believe that. I believe WWE cares about what NXT or what AEW is doing to an extent. And probably to a significant extent. So there's that, but I think what's a bigger, at least as big a piece of that is what happened, earlier this year in March, where we got this press release, Dateline Stamford, Connecticut, March 30th, 2021, where WWE NXT had a 2-year deal that started in the fall of 2019 to be on the USA Network. USA Network's parent, obviously, is NBC Universal. And that deal is coming to an end this fall. And in like 2 months, the first deal will expire. And they renewed. WWE renewed. And they announced on March 30th. That they've signed a multi-year extension. No, we don't know how long it is, but it's multi-year, so at least 2 years. And that this is when they also announced that W would move from Wednesday to Tuesday, and that began on April 13th. And we never got an idea of what WWE really got in terms of TV rights from NBCU for NXT. Of course, NXT was on the W network. It was essentially the flagship show for the W network for the first several years in the pre-Peacock era. And they decided to move it away from being essentially an exclusive network show. Yes, it was on Hulu too, but move it away from the network to be on the USA Network. And the public message was that this, why are they doing this? There was a lot of worry from stock analysts, media analysts, and investor types that why are you taking content that's exclusive or almost exclusive to the W Network and putting it on television when you're trying to grow network subs? And I think the media analysts who aren't inundated in the wrestling industry every day probably didn't appreciate the extent to which WWE wanted to compete head-to-head with AEW and sort of stamp out AEW's progress before it got too far. But the public message, and I think there's legitimacy to this, that maybe NXT could grow into this third media rights brand in addition to Raw and SmackDown. Raw and SmackDown, as we mention these numbers probably almost every week, Raw is getting $265 million a year from NBCU. That's just in the U.S. SmackDown is getting $205 million from Fox. WWE makes, I think last in 2020, made over $500 million, more than half of its revenue from Raw and SmackDown rights fees. To an extent, NXT is bundled in there too, but if you took NXT out, I don't think it would be a huge difference. It would be a minimal difference. So, did NXT turn into this media rights brand? We got some in the first place. There was speculation from stock analysts who covered WWE that the NXT deal to go to USA was worth maybe $50 million a year. Early estimates were $100 million a year, and I don't know how much it is, and I don't know if it's even all guaranteed or if it's to a great degree an ad revenue share. But my current belief is that it's worth well less than what AEW is getting from Turner, which is $44 million a year on an average annual basis. I believe it's something probably closer in the neighborhood to $20 million a year, maybe something like that. Maybe not all guaranteed either. So that's the first year. That's what I believe about the first, not the first year, the first term, which is a 2-year term. Now that's, again, that is coming to an end this September. And the new deal will go into effect. So they announced this new deal this past March. And was it an upgrade? Well, the stock price didn't move when this deal was announced. So at least the market didn't feel like it was a big deal. And they should, if this is a $50 million deal or a $100 million deal on an average annual basis, that would be a big deal. That would be along the lines of WWE's second biggest global TV deal, which is India, $50 million a year they get from Sony in India, If WWE was really getting $50 million or something in that neighborhood for NXT on the USA Network, I would think the stock market would respond. But the stock market didn't respond in March when this deal was announced, or in early April when the stock market had the opportunity to react. And then we had the Q1 call on April 22nd, and Stephen Cahill from Wells Fargo asked Christina Salen what was up with that. And why don't you read the exchange that is highlighted in yellow here.
Yes. So Stephen Cahill said, you've historically commented on a lot of AAVs for these long-term big rights deals in the U.S. So just curious how the AAV of NXT performed or was contracted based on what sort of baked into the year of guidance. And her response was, with regards to NXT, yes, NXT was expected, obviously, because the contract was up and it's within our guidance range that we provided. So we're really pleased with that result, but there's nothing to update with regard to guidance on that front.
Yes. And to be clear, you did not stammer through that. She did. Who is, let's just set the table here for people who may be unacquainted. Who is Stephen Cahill?
He is an analyst from Wells Fargo.
Is he an investor in WWE?
That I do not know. I mean, I would imagine just, for stocks and investments and analysts, but.
Right. These people ask these questions are, I don't know if any of them are investors. I know Morgan Stanley probably, Morgan Stanley owns a piece of WWE, probably in the single digits of percent, low single digits. Wells Fargo, as far as I know, does not own WWE stock. These are investors who write analyses that are meant to help investors know what to do and make their own decisions based on their analysis.
They're financial influencers, if you really think about it.
Yeah, they what they say can move the stock price. And Christina Salen, who is that?
Christina Salen, she is the CFO of WWE.
What does CFO stand for?
Chief Financial Officer.
Yeah. She's not the person who's producing the music.
No, they don't do it anymore.
They don't even do it anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
So basically what I read this to be saying is that whatever the NXT deal was, the new deal, was not a surprise to them. It was not – maybe not even the number is too small to even really affect their guidance. So when they talk about guidance here, they're talking about their profit projections. They have told investors that we expect a profit between this range on the low end and this range on the high end. It's something like $270 million to $300 million in adjusted EBITDA, which is their favorite way of measuring profit, where they get to exclude certain things that they just feel like excluding. So the NXT deal, number one, was not a surprise to them. What they got NBCU to agree to for NXT was not a surprise to them. And perhaps it's just too small money to make that big of a difference anyway to change the range of what they expect their profitability to be. Third, if it was a really great deal, you would think they don't necessarily have to give a number. Certainly they wouldn't report a number on these earnings calls or in their press release, but they could have at least, if it was a great number, celebrated it in some way or given some indication about how happy they were about it. And I know she's happy saying that we're really pleased with that result, but it wasn't a highlight in the press release. It only came up because a stock analyst asked about it. And naturally, because this is NXT rights or something that has been hyped in the past or been justified. They justify putting it on the USA Network with the idea that they would be able to grow this third brand as a major media rights producer. So we don't get any sort of hype. It's not leaked to the Hollywood Reporter or to Sports Business Journal that this is a big deal, which you think if this was a big deal, something like that might happen, but it didn't. So I think what happened here, not just that, yes, NXT did not win the Wednesday Night War, AEW did. And NXT did not transform itself into just being some hybrid version of developmental and good content for the W Network into being, you know, whatever value that has, into being this real tangible value of producing, you know, dozens of millions of dollars in media rights every year. So that's not happening. NXT did not turn into this third media rights brand. Yet it's still on USA Network. Okay, it's probably producing some money. I would guess somewhere around $20 million a year. Doesn't sound like it got a major upgrade. And I think that's sort of the financial, tangible, quantifiable, if you want to call it, failure, or that didn't meet its expectations. So it makes sense in a way to sit here and say, well, you're not producing all this money for us, all this revenue for us that we hoped that you would. I guess there's another chance in the future, but really what Vince wants is developmentally, he wants talent that's going to feed his main roster brand. Meanwhile, he's also not been happy, apparently, by reading the tea leaves of what happens on Raw and SmackDown. He's not been happy with what NXT is producing for him. And it sounds like we're going to go back to the John Laurinaitis philosophy of big people, athletes, bodybuilders, maybe fitness models, maybe, and
physical specimens.
That's right. People who are tall. And let's think about too. It's not as if Triple H has all along been this advocate for great independent non-WWE talent and bodybuilder sports specimen talent. It seemed to me that you know Triple H was more along the lines of that kind of thinking years ago when he first took over developmental. I like to bring up how in 2014 when he started doing those media calls, how he talked about how the independent talent becomes less and less of a factor all the time. He said in 2014, right before I think it was the very first takeover or the second takeover, and how it was an effort to reteach people out of their wrong indie style into our good, superior WWE style. And then later in 2014, in part just because of, I think, the development of media and the increasing ubiquity of smartphones and everybody's increasing connection to the internet, increasingly wrestlers like Kevin Owens and Finn Balor got reactions in their debuts at Full Sail. People with no WWE exposure prior to their debuts in NXT got big reactions. And I think this, maybe along with other things, persuaded Triple H to look at talent differently. And it also really turned into NXT being able to take takeover events, their peak events, into major basketball arenas and sell out when they sold out the first takeover at a major arena in Brooklyn in August 2015. So I think Triple H had an evolution, if you will, in how he views talent. I don't know what he really believes at this point. I really hope that Paul Levesque someday writes an honest book. But I don't know what he really believes about talent, what the best way is to go. I do believe that if Vince retired today and spent the rest of his life isolated on a yacht, that main roster would look more like NXT. And I do think that is a, what do I mean by that? I mean, less of a focus, not that it's a non-factor, but less of a focus on size, which is basically what we see in NXT, where you get people like Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano pushed as top champions. So less of a focus on size and less of a concern on size and a higher priority on wrestling ability and charisma, promo ability, personality. Not that there's not sort of a priority on that, but Vince's inability to plan and execute long-term stories and a general inauthenticity and over-reliance on scripting. I think there would be less of that if Paul Levesque was in charge of the main roster creative. And I think that is a better way to attract the largest possible audience. And Vince has always had that preference for bodybuilders and big people and less of a concern for wrestling talent. And that is his personal preference. And he believes that that is the preference of the widest possible audience, but he's wrong. And that's become increasingly wrong over time. What happened too is that in 2014, you had all this talent that was backed up and couldn't get into WWE because of WWE's previous philosophy of valuing people who are huge and not necessarily great wrestlers. So we had all these years where WWE and to an extent they influenced TNA to be this way too. We had all this talent backed up who couldn't get into WWE, and it helps the indies flourish. It helped other non-WWE companies flourish, like Ring of Honor, and to an extent, TNA. And then when Triple H started to change his philosophy, he was able to harvest all this talent that had been backed up outside of his company and to bring them into his company. And it super served a type of fan who was unhappy, unsatisfied with how main roster programming was going. And it helped build NXT into a brand that could put on shows in major arenas that would sell out or come close to selling out in the form of NXT takeovers in conjunction with a pay-per-view weekend. But also, it became an important program to help grow the network. Network wouldn't have been as strong. Not that the network was a success. It wasn't, but it wouldn't have been as strong without NXT. And it was able to even turn into a live event touring brand. Now, I don't know to what extent that national tour was profitable, but it was probably, those national events probably could have been run at a profit. The Largo events, I think, are just a loss leader to the Largo Loop events were just, I think, a loss leader to give people experience. But I think it's not as if Triple H was a genius, but Triple H just realized that good talent is good talent. And they hadn't been acknowledging, I don't know if you would put it this way, but they hadn't been acknowledging how good the talent was out there. And now he had the ability to bring them all in. He benefited from the lack of, from the poor assessment of talent of the regime that came before him. That was led by John Laurinaitis and influenced by Vince McMahon. And he was able
to,
and he was able to benefit from that. And eventually the indies were harvested almost completely. The cream was scraped off the top between the years of 2014 and let's say 2018-19. And for the good of the indies, I mean, if WWE goes back to the 2010 philosophy, let's say, the indies, the U.S. indies for one thing, which are in great need of more talent, I think are in a better position to, I joked to one promoter that like a month or two ago that, well, hopefully with John Laurinaitis coming back to power, they'll go back to ignoring people with talent and that'll revitalize the indies, which are in need of being revitalized after being harvested for the last few years.
I mean, well, first of all, I agree with you on that. One thing I want to say is I don't know if Triple H ever changed his philosophy that maybe he didn't always believe this, but because I think the Sin Cara failure was like a stop and start for him. I feel like if that would have worked, he would have been able to do what he was doing in 2014 and 2012 and 2013. But I think because it just didn't work, I think that definitely hurt him. But I also say too, I mean, look at the timeline. 2014, not only was it, you know, Triple H was starting to like kind of gain power to do this, but the business of TNA drastically changed at that point. They were no longer this on Spike TV getting a million viewers and
because they self-destructed.
Yeah.
Much like WCW before them.
Yeah, so it was like a perfect mix of that. But yeah. But yeah, I felt like this was going this way back in like 11 and 12 when he signed Sin Cara, but obviously that didn't work out. And I wonder if that was the hesitation of why it took so many, a few years.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's something else happening here that is just sort of the hubris and arrogance of WWE, that they, this notion that WWE knows the right way. And if you didn't do it our way, you're not doing it right. And you're not doing it in a way that's going to be as marketable as it could be, which I think is, it creates this false hierarchy. And I think that has also kind of existed in WWE in the last few years too, where, you know, I think it really hurts the ability to grow stars and to create marketable talent, when you've got to go through this huge and way too complicated system where you get into the PC and then maybe you get onto TV if you please the right people and all of their subjective opinions. And then maybe after a few years of doing that, but by which, you know, all the while you're getting older, you finally get to the main roster. And then you've got to, you know, please the tastes of Vince McMahon, who has very different tastes from the people who you had to please before. It, you know, there is no central, philosophy, it seems, that everybody agrees on. I think this has got a much more outdated philosophy than the NXT people do. And, you know, it complicates and slows down the ability to cultivate stars, which is one problem among their other problems with, developing stars and stories that people care about, which is never going to happen to any strong degree, in my view, while Vince is the head of creative. And I think this adds to the pile of reasons why I'm not that optimistic about WWE's future, in terms of its holding on to its huge lead in the wrestling space as the industry leader. I think that lead is going to narrow over time. And, however you want to measure that, we're going to measure it in ratings in September and it's going to get smaller. You know, if Vince is turning 76 this month, did you know that? For what it's worth, you know, not that there's anything wrong with being old as I get older here.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from Arena Club. .com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
As time goes on here, it's going to continue to limit the ability to which main roster WWE, which controls the majority of their revenue, Raw and SmackDown generate the majority of their revenue. It's going to limit the extent to which they're able to generate stars. And WWE can talk about all they want about how they're a media company that sells IP. But last I checked their SEC filings, their biggest source of revenue is core content. And that core content is not for movies or reality TV series or A&E biographies or, licensing talent to do cameo videos. It's for in-ring programming. It's for wrestling. And it's kind of connected to, I think, WWE's problem with their brand, and that they're, you kind of see it. I think the Voice of Wrestling were putting over how, not that this is a big deal, but that the six-man that happened on Dynamite, which involved Daniel Garcia, who we trained, full disclosure, but how that's just sort of acknowledged to a small subset of fans that, other universes in this wrestling world exist, whereas WWE is totally the opposite. They're not embracing that other things in wrestling exist. They're trying to deny and transcend wrestling and to not be involved in wrestling. And I think Vince barely pays attention to any wrestling that he's not involved with, and he's not sitting at the gorilla watching live. They want to distance themselves from wrestling and not be wrestling. And as your ARPU increases, as your audience gets smaller and your remaining audience becomes more hardcore and spends more money per person, that philosophy, that way of viewing the business, becomes outdated more every day. And is it going to come to a point where AEW meets or exceeds them in terms of popularity in some consumer metrics? Maybe. And it becomes more likely because of the way Vince holds his philosophy and influences others in his company to make decisions.
All right. If we want to move on to the news of the official news of Canyon Seaman's replacement, Trent Wolfinger, he actually tweeted that he was excited to share that he'll be joining the WWE as a new Senior Vice President of Talent, ID, and Development. I look forward to working side by side with James Kimble under the leadership of Triple H to bring to life a game-changing vision and strategy. Another guy with a big sports background, if those of you like not familiar with James Kimble, was the actually Vice President of Operations of the UFC Performance Institute. And Trent Wolfinger, most recently, I think it was a Pro Elite Sports, but also was Game Operations Director with the Arizona Coyotes and the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Wow. So very good. You're on top of this, Chris Gallo.
I will tell you why I know a lot about James Kimble after the show.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, and this is maybe somebody who's replacing some or all the duties that Canyon Seaman had. I don't know. But Canyon Seaman, as I think we alluded to on one program, and he hadn't really been let go from WWE, but now he has left WWE. So maybe this is somebody who's taking over some of those duties, if not all of them. And I just wanted to revisit. There was an article on WrestleNomics.com that came out way back in November that where we analyzed all the data that we could from cage match going all the way back to 2000 through the present at that moment, November 2020. Just looking at, you can see in terms of data how WWE's philosophy on what talent to promote to the main roster has changed over time, where wrestlers who had most of their experience, will this be clear? Will you know what I'm talking about when I phrase it this way? Most of the wrestlers,
a little bit, yeah.
Let's say the question is, before I went to the main roster, which we define as you having 10 main roster matches, before I went to the main roster, What made up the majority of my experience at that point? Was it mostly non-WWE system matches, or was it mostly WWE system matches, i.e. developmental? Yeah. And so if you're a what we might call a non-universe wrestler versus a WWE system wrestler, the majority from 2000, where the middle point seems to be 2007 to 2009 or so. So in that first decade of the 2000, in the 2000s, it's mostly non-universe people who make it to the main roster, but it becomes increasingly towards 2010, WWE system people. But then after that point, the trend largely reverses to the point where it's sort of at a low or tied with a low in 2020, at least when we measured it in November, where 81%. Of the wrestlers who had their 10th main roster match, 81% of them had the majority of their experience from non-WWE matches. But, and I think this speaks to how Vince assesses talent, the majority, is that the right, would that be correct to say? Yeah. The majority of those non-WWE people who made it to the main roster, the majority of them were just used to flesh out B shows like 205 Live and WWE Main Event, whereas those who were WWE system people who got promoted to the main roster in recent years were more likely to spend more of their time on the A shows, Raw and SmackDown.
All right.
We should have done this analysis by height too. That would have been helpful.
All right. If we want to move on to the Gullo report, mm-hmm. This is my time to shine here. It's ratings talk. We'll start with SmackDown here. And this is SmackDown with the, this is your estimation after the overnight, correct?
Correct. Yeah. It will always be this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, about 2,150,000. So 2.1 million compared to last week, which did about a little over 2 million, about 40,000 over that. So a little bit of an increase for SmackDown as John Cena continues to be part of these programs. So
right, and let's, while you're talking about SmackDown, let's jump to this slide where we're now at a point where SmackDown is doing considerably better than I thought it would be. I expected, I've been saying this probably for weeks on end, I expect these ratings to be back to the level of, you know, the last weeks of the Thunderdome by the middle of August. And today it's August 8th, so there's still time. But SmackDown is, they got a bump, they got a jump from the return to touring, and it hasn't fallen back down to the Thunderdome level yet. They're over 2 million, and they were doing under 2 million in those last few weeks of the Thunderdome. So maybe I was being too pessimistic. And we'll talk about Raw too, which I think is next.
Yeah. So to Monday Night Raw here, they did a little over 1.8 million with a 0.51 in the 18 to 49. Compare that to the week before, just a little over 1.8 million as well with a 0.49 and the 18 to 49. So not much movement there between July 26th and August 2nd.
Right. So, and what we see here, and I've pulled out the, oh boy, I don't know if I can make this big enough. Let's see. I'm pulling out the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which you can get access to at WrestleNomics at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And if we look, let's see here.
Only $5 a month. What a deal.
Yeah. And you get access to my, almost daily reports on the ratings, which is where the ratings news is being broken. This is where the ratings information comes from. Let's see here. So Raw, as you said, 1.8 million viewers this week, but also did 657,000 in 1849, which is up from the prior week. Up from the prior week. So Raw up very, very slightly, almost identical in total viewership, but up more by percent in terms of the key ad demo, 18 to 49. So you see this in Raw and in SmackDown where, you know, the ball has bounced and it seems like it's hitting the floor here. It's not continuing to fall down. And we see that. We'll see what happens on Monday. We'll get final numbers for SmackDown on Monday too. But the 1 hour did a 0.5 in the demo. The other hour did a 0.6. So that probably, you know, that's obviously a 0.55 average and it'll probably be a little bit higher in the final. So maybe they did like a 0.6, which would come out to, what would that come out to? That would come out to a pretty good number. Do we have anything that's done like a point? Yeah. A few weeks ago on the 16th. So this was the first show back to touring. They did a 0.66, which was over 850,000, 1849 viewers. So I don't know. I would expect maybe something around the high 700s or low 800s in terms of, 1849. So we'll see. SmackDown and Raw seem to be hitting their plateau as opposed to falling back down further towards the numbers that they were doing at the end of the Thunderdome era. So, you know, I am starting to feel like, well, maybe I was being too pessimistic here, expecting, Raw and SmackDown to not be as benefited long-term by the return to touring. And there clearly is a coincidental, at least, increase. It helps to have John Cena. Maybe it helps to have Goldberg, but we'll see, how they do in the weeks to come. They're doing better than I expected.
All right. And we're going to move on to NXT, all this NXT talk. Well, how are they doing on Sci-Fi with the Olympics, which are actually wrapping up today? So they'll be back on USA this Tuesday. But on Sci-Fi, they did 520,000 with a 0.10 in 1849. Almost very similar numbers, 520,000 with a 0.12 in the 18 to 49 last week. So
exactly the same total viewership on Sci-Fi. I don't think there's much of anything to read here. Except for I expected these numbers to be lower, too. I expected NXT on Sci-Fi to be under 500,000. And here they did an identical 520,000 on both both preemption nights.
All right. And then moving on to Dynamite, which continues to have impressive ratings since fans are back here. They actually did 1.1 million. In the 18 to 49 did a 0.46, but 1.1 million overall. Yeah, well, I can imagine that. But 1.1 million overall, you know, P2, and then 0.46 in 18 to 49 compared to the week before, what it did, you know, 1.110,000 with a 0.45. So very similar numbers, but very very good for AEW to continue this trend.
Yeah. Like, some of this is sort of a groundswell of people knowing, okay, CM Punk and maybe Brian are on their way. But they're just, you know, also in the view of many people who we hear talk about the show, they're putting on a good show that people watch and like to watch. And I know it's it sounds dumb, but if you put on a good show, maybe it encourages people to watch it again.
All right.
And then, I guess we could add too. I think we were talking about a little bit before we started recording that it's the reaction that I get. And obviously this is disproportionate. I'm not just being facetious here, being sarcastic, but on the reaction that I get on Twitter for some things is disproportionate when it comes to AEW. Obviously you see that bared out here where, you know, even though we're talking about these good numbers for AEW, it's half of what SmackDown is doing still, right? In terms of total viewership, 1.1 million to nearly 2.2 million maybe this week for SmackDown, right? So it's about double. SmackDown does about double what Dynamite does. But when I report the ratings, for what it's worth, when I report the ratings for Raw or for SmackDown, including when I reported the ratings for that, I was very interested in what the number would be on the first numbers on the return to touring with fans in attendance. And you expect, you know, they've been saying for months and for a year and a half that the problem with ratings is we just don't have our fans, and wrestling is, you can't really do wrestling without the fans. And now they finally got the fans back, and I reported the ratings. I was very interested and excited. And the response in terms of, you know, our readership and listenership was not as strong for those numbers as I maybe expected they would be. But the AEW Dynamite number, even here now, you know, we're weeks out from the return to touring, and AEW's return to touring was far more gradual than WWE's was. So it wasn't as abrupt of a novelty as it was for WWE. But every time I report these ratings and I tweet the link out and the number out, there's this huge explosion of all degrees of reactions, all different varieties of emotion happening, quote tweets and so forth. It's a huge reaction, far bigger than the reaction to the ratings for WWE. Why is that? I have an inkling. What do you think, Gullo?
Well, I think the interest in AEW as a brand is just increasing. People are tuning in. It's fresh. It's different. And it's funny because, like, the people that would like to hate on AEW, whenever they get a rating like this, usually say, like, oh, it's because they had Shaq or they had Mike Tyson, or, oh, the first episode with fans, or, oh, it's the debut. None of those are factors right now. This is just them putting on a solid Dynamite week after week after week. Like, there is no
Wait a minute. Isn't it possible that Tony Khan could be using his family money to set up televisions around the country that you know, just increase the ratings artificially? Is that a possibility?
I heard what was the other rumor? The other ridiculous thing that he bought most of the tickets in Chicago or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Or the ratings aren't real numbers or something. I don't know. Anyway, Nielsen is a sample, as we'll talk about in a moment when we talk about Impact, and that is an issue sometimes. But when you're talking about bigger audiences, it's not as much of an issue. I think what's happening is there's a section of fans. Let's not try to figure out how big they are, how important they are at the moment. But there's a section of fans for whom, I've talked about it before. They want to see economic justice or creative justice. They're rooting for the brand AEW. They want to like wrestling. They haven't liked a lot of the wrestling that WWE has put out. They haven't felt embraced by WWE in a lot of ways, and they want to see an alternative brand that's independent from WWE. And I think these same sort of people supported NXT in its rise as a brand as well. But they want to see a separate company, independent of WWE, that embraces wrestling and embraces the wrestling community, embraces wrestling fandom to a greater degree. They want to see that brand succeed. They're rooting. There are people who are rooting for the business of AEW. Besides this stuff that you see on screen, the sort of the normative narrative about, you know, are you into Adam Page and Kenny Omega? Are you rooting for, you know, Jungle Boy? Are you interested in seeing in CM Punk? There's a separate interest that is particular just to our content, I guess. It's not as significant to everything else, but that there's people. Well, I think it is significant in some ways to the brand, to promotion of the brand, organic promotion of the brand among fans to other potential fans, right? And that people want to see this company succeed. Not that there aren't people. As soon as I say that, I can feel the Twitter mentions, right? There are people who want to see WWE succeed. Believe me, there are. All right. I know.
I don't know. I just think in today's world, there is a lot of, we talk about the key demo, but we got to break down the wrestling fan base demos in that too, right? There's people that want nostalgia. There's people that want the more hardcore deathmatch. There's people that want the lucha style, this and that. And I think, you know, AEW, to the greatest extent, NXT did a good job for a while, but AEW, to the greatest extent, tries to hit all those niches in a two-hour program. I'll just put it this way. Juventud Guerrero was presented last Wednesday the way I wanted him to be presented, and not on a lawnmower in a jumpsuit.
Not that WWE did that recently, but your point remains. Not that they wouldn't do it recently.
my point is that they hit a lot of niches, and I've been raving this week. Obviously we both tuned into Dynamite, the C Garcia, but I think Matt Lee from 2.0 is one of the most underrated talkers in the business. The guy just oozes charisma, and here's a guy that they let go. He took anything they gave him in NXT, the coffee mugs and the building the house, and I thought made it great. And then here's they give him a platform like as soon as they can in AEW, and you can see it. I don't know.
But then there's two other things too. Here is the extent to which NXT did serve as an alternative to main roster for fans who were not that happy with main roster. It served as an alternative. It sounds like the future of NXT from this point forward will be less so that if the talent recruitment and the talent elevation is going to be different. And secondly, that's in terms of what they're serving fans. So maybe that it at least doesn't infringe that much on what Dynamite is doing or what AEW is doing. And secondly, in terms of talent recruitment in general, I haven't understood for a while, other than money, why, if you're a young wrestler with ambition and talent, why would you sign with WWE and not pursue growing your career in other ways, at least before going there and making them want you because they can't have you and they want to keep you away from somebody else? I don't get it.
Sugar Dunkinson actually put a tweet out last night. He listed the 7 wrestling companies that have TV, but he included NWA in that. So WWE, AEW, Ring of Honor, Impact, NWMLW, and WWE's the only one that doesn't allow wrestlers to work independent. and he's like, that just shows you there, they want people to get different. All these other companies want people to get different experience, go out there. I'm sure some of it's financial too. Some of these companies know they can't give guys contracts to be exclusive, but I think it's the my way or the highway method of WWE, and you're really seeing this with these NXT cuts and this rebranding.
Yeah, I guess, if you're a young wrestler who's got a lot of talent and you believe, I think there are a lot of wrestlers yes, we hear this all the time, right? Like, it's my childhood dream to main event WrestleMania and work for WWE. And this seems to be a factor too. But that WWE that you grew up watching is different. It's different than the WWE that I grew up watching. And I think there's a lot of wrestlers who believe in themselves naturally. A lot of wrestlers who end up doing well and being ambitious have a strong belief in their own talents and abilities, right? I think a lot of them think that, well, they'll be, maybe if they're aware of the problems that WWE has, in our view, or my view anyway, I don't want to project onto you, Gull, and undermine your ability to win the TikTok contest, but.
I deleted my video. I didn't like it. I didn't like the way it came off. I deleted it. I'm probably on a list. I like to say I'm on a list.
Yeah. Yeah.
I enjoy a lot of WWE programming. I watch a lot. I there's a lot of people I like that work there. Yeah, I sometimes come off anti-WWE. I don't mean that. I just come off of what I like to see as a product, what's fresh to me, you know.
But anyway, so. If you're a young wrestler with ambition, I think there's a tendency for some wrestlers to believe that, well, I'll be the exception. And even though I know the other people have problems, they didn't get pushed right, didn't get handled right, didn't get the right opportunity. But I'll be different. Vince will get me. I think Vince is not going to get you. You are not going to be the one that's going to finally help Vince see the light. You're not going to be the one that he figures out. But he sees you differently than all the others. Vince isn't going to get you. Unless you're a bodybuilder. And you're related to somebody who he employed in the past, he's probably not going to get you. And if you want to work for WWE eventually, I think you'd be better off, even if you do want to work for WWE eventually, you'd be better off growing your name and your abilities and your brand outside of WWE and making them pursue you to a stronger degree later.
So actually you have... kind of go back to Dynamite. You do have
a huge tangent there. Hours.
Yes, it's been a very NXT centric episode.
Well, talk about it. Tell me what the impact rating was, real quick.
Oh yeah, we'll do the impact rating real quick, Gary. 103,000.04 in 1849. Slightly down, very slightly down from the week before. 110,000.02 in the.
There are three impact ratings on Axis that are lower than this. One is the July 1st program error episode. The other two are the nights in 2020, in September of 2020, when NXT was preempted and aired on Tuesday, when Impact was still on Tuesday. So this is, you know, sort of the third, this is sort of the lowest rating ever in terms of a genuine rating. I think there's maybe it's tied, but we're getting into, you know, lowest ratings ever here territory. Without extenuating circumstances, the 1849 is all over the place here. It's up 176% from last week. The median age is all over the place. The median age was 60 last week. It's now like 48 again this week. I think it's, you know, Nielsen uses a sample to determine these results, right? And the smaller your actual audience is, the smaller the sample is to determine these results. So therefore, the more volatile these numbers tend to be when we're talking about smaller audiences. We're talking about 100,000 viewers here, as opposed to Dynamite's doing over a million, 10 times that, as opposed to Raw and SmackDown there that are doing nearly 20 times that. So take these numbers for what they're worth.
Is Jay White's not a draw?
Kenny Omega's not a draw. Jay White's not a draw. I don't know. Whatever you want. Yeah. Quote tweet me.
But yeah, we go to the quarter hour breakdowns here, and I mean the biggest quarter hour was the 1.26, which was the conclusion of Jericho and Hoovy, where Wardlow attacked Jericho and MJF cut the promo, and then you had the Penta Phoenix Andrade promo,
That's
pre six man tag intros. Yeah.
I don't have a lot to say about this. There was another DirecTV air at about 8:49 p.m. Eastern time during the Blade and the Christian match. That happened for about 90 seconds or something like that. But it was actually, so that was Q4. It didn't have a massive effect on that quarter like it did last week when DirecTV feed went out. Main event grew viewership after sort of the middle two-thirds of the show slightly decreased over time. So people were apparently interested in seeing the Cody and Malakai Black match. So, yeah. Their peak was just over 1.2 million.
All right. And you have a nice little chart here of top AEW ratings here.
Yeah, I guess we should have mentioned this a moment ago when we were talking about AEW. Where does this most recent episode land in terms of top most highly viewed episodes? This is the
number six,
the sixth biggest audience ever for AEW, and in terms of total audience, but in terms of 18 to 49, this is the third biggest, almost tied for second.
October 9th? Fourth biggest.
Really?
Yes, because you have October 2nd, and then it's October 9th, and then and July 28th. Oh, no, never mind. That's less. Never mind. I did the math wrong. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
You're right. How did I doubt you? You're the math guy.
I make mistakes a lot. It is the third biggest 1849 audience ever. I guess we should talk about this. I didn't even think to put this on the lineup as we're over an hour here, so we got to get done soon. But Rampage debuts this week.
Yes.
Predictions. I think steady state, all things equal, that by that I mean no CM Punk or Daniel Bryan, 500,000, 250, but debut will be different. Debut will have a novelty factor of, let's say, yeah, of, let's say, 20% or so. So if I bring out the calculator, which now everybody's going, let's not do that.
Saying like 600,000. I think that's,
let's just multiply this
about
by
where you're going to land.
1.2. 600,000. There you go. I agree. Yeah, what do you think for we can revise this next week. But episode 2 at the United Center.
If there's no official announcement made that he's there, just for the curiosity of surprise, but Friday night 10 o'clock, I'd say 750.
750, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's not bad. It's not bad for an over-under. 600 this week, 750 next week. If you want to 18 to 49, because that's the only thing that matters. Just slice it in half, I would say, roughly 300. And what would half of 350 be? Or 750, that's 325, right? Yeah. No, it's 370. What is 750 divided by 2? 375. It's 375.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Live event attendance. Blow through this. Raw in Chicago did well, over 12,000 distributed. SmackDown in Tampa on Friday night, nearly 9,000 distributed. There's a house show on Saturday night, over 5,600 distributed. SmackDown was back at Daly's Place this past Wednesday, 2,500, which I heard someone say was the biggest audience ever. At Daly's Place. Obviously, that's well below what they've been doing on tour. Charlotte was their biggest Dynamite yet since the return to touring the week prior at nearly 7,000 distributed. That's events that have happened in the past. Upcoming events, we have Pittsburgh with both Dynamite and Rampage this week, right? So expect a lot of Britt Baker here. They're currently configured for just over 5,000 both nights, and they're a few hundred under 5,000 for each night. There's a house show in Gainesville tonight, which might be looking like having the smallest WWE audience yet. Looks like they're configured for under 3,000 at the moment. 2,200 are out at the moment for Gainesville, Florida. But Raw in Orlando, well over 7,000. They'll probably end up around 8,000 or just over for Raw in Orlando. And then Tulsa. I feel like I'm doing the Road Report on like some weekend show right now. And then in Tulsa, WWE SmackDown comes to Tulsa, Oklahoma. 5,263 currently out, 757 still available. And yeah, and obviously the United Center sold out this week, as we probably alluded to was likely last week. 13,656 appear to be out for that show, which puts it in the company of the few shows that have over 10,000 tickets out that are upcoming. And we actually have, if this is, I mean, it will probably not end up this way when all is said and done, but we, as far as events upcoming in the future that currently have 10,000 or more tickets distributed, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of those shows, and 1, 2, 3 of them are AEW. 2 of them are WWE. Of course, SummerSlam is by far the leader. Over 44,000 tickets are out for Las Vegas SummerSlam. But AEW's got Chicago. Over 13,000 has got Newark, New Jersey. Over 10,000. WWE London, which will be a Raw in September, September 20th, has over 14,000. And Dynamite in Queens at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Flushing. Someone explain to me what the difference is, or what the taxonomy is between Flushing and Queens. But anyway, Arthur Ashe Stadium, over 17,000 out, which is the second biggest attendance at this point, next to SummerSlam. India.
All right. Yeah, India. Eurosport, India to be exact, signed a deal with AEW. They acquired the broadcasting rights to AEW, and it's going to be a weekly wrestling program in India. And it looks like it'll begin on August 15th from Dynamite.
So AEW finally has TV, finally has TV in India, according to AEW Senior Vice President of Business Strategy, Chris Harrington. He said that people were asking on social media all the time, asking Tony Schiavone or something about when they're going to have TV in India. Well, apparently starting 2 weeks from now, they will have TV in India. Second biggest market for WWE in terms of TV. Who knows what they're getting here for Eurosport. Who owns Eurosport? Chris Gullo, do you know?
That I don't. It's not Fox, right?
Google it. Who owns Eurosport? AEW's new home in India. So no longer will you only be able to watch AEW in India on Fight TV. You will actually be able to watch it on a traditional television network, Eurosport.
Discovery.
Discovery. Who's merging with Discovery soon?
Was it Warner Brothers, right?
Warner Media,
yes.
Warner Media.
What would happen to both streaming services? Yes.
So AEW, do you know what AEW's other TV partners are around the world? They've got in certain regions in Europe. There's, go ahead. What do you think?
I know. I know the England ones.
ITV in England. ITV in the UK.
Yeah, ITV. Okay, that's
not just
ITV.
England. I don't want people adding us again.
Oh, so, ITV in the UK. It was a sorry. I'm honestly like, I don't remember all of them, but
so there's TNT Siri, I think in Germany. It might be a similar sort of TNT international offshoot in some other regions. Space in Latin America. Who owns Space? Do you know who owns Space?
I would assume Warner Media, but
Warner Media owns Space. So I think with the exception of the UK, all of AEW's TV partners on linear TV are owned by either Warner Media or now by Discovery. And it's not as if we draw the WWE comparison, WWE has partners with all different sorts of parent companies or subsidiaries of parent companies around the world. This is conspicuous how AEW TV deals are neatly partnered with either their major US TV partner or a company that TV partner is soon to merge with. So, yeah, that's interesting. And I think it lines up a situation maybe in the years to come where it might make sense for Warner Media to acquire AEW, but we'll see. We're not going to spend all this time on Google web search, but you can see the Google Web Search report that I did for the recently ended month of July 2021 on Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. That is there for our subscribers, going through the Google Web Search for all the name talent that I can think of for WWE, AEW, and New Japan Pro Wrestling. We study Google Web Search for companies as well, just showing you to what extent WWE's web search volume exceeds that of every other company that you can think of combined. So WWE has 77% of the share, if you will. Compare that to AEW, New Japan, Impact, Stardom, Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, Noah, and some others. Combine all of them, and they only account for less than a quarter of the search volume that happened in July, and that's not an unusual data point there. It's usually something like that. So WWE is still the monster in terms of web search. For whatever that's worth, I think that's reflective of name ID and of mind share. So there's that. I did a stream on Thursday of TV ratings. If you watched it, let me know what you thought of it. I might do more of those in the future. No promises. We'll see. But give me some feedback on that if you watched it, or go check it out and let me know what you think of it. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel for WrestleNomics, so we can do more and grow the YouTube channel in the future. We are strongly considering our streaming options here as we go forward in the business of WrestleNomics. Any plugs, Chris Gullo?
This is standard, Chris Gullo, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Rediscovering Indies, my other podcast, RTI Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll have a new episode later this, month about the, NWA title, from the end of the TNA partnership through the Bruce Tharp era to the purchase of Billy Corgan. And it's not just NWA world title, but it get a lot into NWA business too and stuff like that. And it's a very interesting time when Bruce Tharp owns the NWA brand. But yeah, so that, and as far as me, the rest of my August is free and easy. I have a comedy show locally in Buffalo on the 13th, but other than that, nothing until September. I have a wrestling show on September 11th, and then it doesn't get busy and crazy again until October. So
wonderful. We have credits now. We have credits.
I see.
Let's see if I can
Facebook
do this.
Group share.
Our co-host and executive producer is Brandon Thurston. Our co-host, Facebook group sharer, voicesofwrestling.com poster is Chris Gullo. Our WrestleNomics.com transcriber is Jason Unpersuth. Please tell me if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, Jason. Our technical consultant who gave me a lot of help this week and maybe giving me some help in the future is Phil Chertok from the post-wrestling family. And the creator, founder, originator of this WrestleNomics brand is Chris Harrington. You can follow us at WrestleNomics. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gullo.
And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.